I told him WP time.
Well, what a powerful film. Congratulations. I mean, I'm calling this like the post Black Lives Matter first film, because it talks about gentrification, talks about the fear as a black man. I mean, there's just so much to, like, blew my mind when, you know, especially that, the thing you did with the policeman. I mean, that was just mind-blowing.
Thanks, guys.
Can you talk about how, you know, how this came to fruition, you guys working together?
I mean, we've been friends for the bulk of our lives and, like, collaborators for about as long, so... and this film's been in development for 10 years. So we... yeah, very... And with the same producers. I mean, kind of the only way you get to make something this specific, I think, is for the whole team to be on board. So really, you know, Jess and Keith Calder have been with us from jump. It was their suggestion that we try to write a movie together. Mm-hmm. And we... You know, very early on, the prompt was essentially, it's got to be about the Bay Area, and it's got to use verse in some interesting way. Jess sort of discovered Rafa via his YouTube poetry, and that's kind of was the impetus for this whole situation. So that's why we were making a movie, to try and accurately talk about Oakland, which we'd never seen on screen before in a way that felt like the Oakland we grew up in. Mm-hmm. And to use verse, and sort of as we started developing a story about Oakland, you can't talk about it without talking about gentrification. If you're talking about Oakland right now, and it turns out you can't talk about gentrification without talking about all of these other things, because it's really all the same thing. And so all we really had to do was we came up with the characters we wanted to play, and we just let them live as honestly as possible. And the sort of interesting thing about that is you discover all of these interesting touch points and talking points that feel really relevant right now. But those have changed over the years. You know, the relevance has sort of changed based on whatever's happening in the news. And the nice thing that we discovered is all we had to do was tell the story accurately, and try to be as honest as possible. And it's sort of like equal parts gratifying and tragic that it is as relevant today as it was 10 years ago when we started writing it.
I that's really interesting that you said that, because working on this over 10 years and everything that has happened just in the past 3 years, I mean, it's just so on point. And so your characters, are they slightly based on people you saw when you were growing up, or...
Yeah, I think everyone in the film is a composite of people that were we grew up around. Mostly because the what felt most important is that this had to feel sincere, and when you're dealing with something that is both like timely and sincere, and an incredibly sensitive subject matter, because it directly affects so many people that are going to see the film. I think that made us really look at every scene as, okay, well, what are the truth entry points here? How are we making sure the parameters feel while we're telling a fictional story? We're telling true experiences throughout. So most scenes, sort of until some of the climactic scenes in the end, are all based on either situations we were in or a close friend of ours told us about. That we sort of modified and adapted to play into the story in some way, but tried to find the entry points of the scene from some lived experience.
This is the one thing I love. It's like the story really comes down to decisions. The decisions you make and how what the outcome of your life would become. Because there's some powerful words, and especially when your girlfriend in the film is talking, well, your ex-girlfriend is talking to you in the film, mm-hmm. telling you about it's bad to be with this person, you just got a parole, you need to save yourself and make the better decisions. What was it about that when you read the script saying, like, because it really does come down to true life events?
Yeah, I mean, so much of... There's so much in life for all of us that's outside of what we can control, right? And that's one of the interesting things about this idea of blind spotting that we're sort of exploring in this film, is that you cannot control the world's perception of you in a lot of ways, right? Our choices, and our choices are, you know, that affects them or vice versa. So I think, you know, Val is somebody who is acutely aware of the world around her and is is determined to make her life better within the context of the world, right? Colin is sort of struggling to come to terms with that. And the fact that the world is changing and the fact that his safety is in danger by, you know, regardless of what choices he makes. And so, you know, that has to influence the choices that he makes. And then Miles is sort of the other side of the spectrum where he doesn't care about the world outside. He's trying to keep, he's all about loyalty and about, you know, the way it's been forever. And that, you know, I think all of us can sort of find ourselves in one part of that spectrum, like somewhere between Miles and Val. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think, you know, and where you find yourself on that is going to have real life consequences. When you, like we say all the time about this film, is that it's a buddy comedy, but trying not to ignore the world around it. And so every choice that these characters in this comedy makes have real life consequences, because that's the influence of the world coming in, which, you know, we all sort of have to think about that, I think, in our lives.
You know, it's a great concept that you came up with, the fact that you have 3 days. So in the mind, I mean, the audience last night, we were like, no!
This is something about introducing a countdown that everyone's like, and as it gets closer, I just know it's going to ramp up.
So was that from the start, or did it eventually evolve into having like this deadline?
I think the probation thing is within the last draft, within the last sort of round of changing it. Because the story used to be so much more about the collective outrage of the city, when that was true to life, right? That when something like this happened, cities went crazy. Mm-hmm. But this is not true anymore. Like now, we like cities go Tuesday. You know, it's on the news, and you sort of hear the bullet points of the facts. And that's, you know, that scene that we both really love, where Miles looks at the TV and just goes, convicted felon, you have a gun, blah, 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 pass on the outrage, you know. And he's doing it a little more externally. He's like, no one else is going to get mad, but he's essentially also saying it for himself, and for everyone in the house, that this isn't going to be the one that moves the needle, so why waste the energy? Like, that's sort of where we're at now. Is it feels like we're searching for the perfect, most horrific situation that'll never come, because we've seen so many things already that should have begged for sympathy, and they haven't, right? Shootings of kids, white kids. That would have been my joke. Mm-hmm. It's like, when it's little white kids, it'll change, and it doesn't. So I think now we're in this state where we had to create a new container for the film, where Colin was existing in a world of pressure that was not about the town turning on him, but of him being more aware that the town has always been against him. Mm-hmm. And that he is feeling his mortality in this constraint in a different way. And then, of course, the reality that, like, probation is trying to send you back to jail, especially in the last sort of leg of it. It's all these sort of weird things you have to do when you're closing out that are sort of meant to trip you up, or, you know, arguably feel meant to trip you up. I would argue that they just are. because there are economic incentives to keep you there, right. So why not? It's a capitalist country. you know, so we brought in that container, one, largely because we felt like it was a really great container, but it's also based, again, on a close friend of mine's experience in his last few days. We have this thread of Colony needs to clean the bathroom. And we took that from a real close friend of mine's experience, where he served 6 years in prison, did a year of halfway house, and on the last day forgot to clean the bathroom, and they sent him back to jail for 7 months.
There was an alternate ending of this.
We originally were going to go there, and then we sort of watched the film, you read the film, we're like, let's give people a break.
Well, that's funny that you say that, because you were just talking, like, I'm glad they ended it on a hopeful, because the whole time you're saying he's going to go back to jail, because we know what it's like in real life. He's going to go back to jail. I'm glad you left it.
We brought you back to just enough of a laugh where you could leave and not feel like, God, that was just like a total bummer. So it has the weight, but we wanted it to be a hopefully a film that Like those, the my favorite kind of films that feel anything close to this are ones that I can watch again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always so sad when there's a film where I'm like, God, that was amazing.
Never
again.
Yeah.
And never, you know, every time you're flipping it on Netflix, you're like, not right now. You know.
I think there's like a it's an interesting sort of in some ways more subversive choice too. You know, it leaves it as a comedy in the traditional sense in that it returns to the status quo, right? That's how comedies work. But in this case, I think we've learned a little bit more about the status quo along the way, so that return is actually bittersweet in some ways. It's actually with for both of the characters a little like more knowledge about how fucked up the status quo.
This is like the nerdy kind of structural stuff that we're really into.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I don't know
what
this door got opened.
What if you return the status quo? Status quo is actually, I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
God, we're so heady.
This is one of the things I enjoyed about the film is that we see so many films that sometimes it's hard to invest into the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And your characters, you really wanted the best for each one.
Thank you. We hope so. I mean, that you know, so much of this was a love letter to Oakland for us, and in order for that to be true, you have to kind of love everybody you come in contact with in a real way, you know, because that's, the town is made up of a bunch of individuals, like, just trying to get by, and so we, you know, Miles and Colin get a ton of screen time, and so we expect that you develop some sort of love for them if we did our job right, but what gratifies me watching it is how much I end up loving Val and Ashley and Sean and even, you know, even all of the cameos, like, everybody came in and did such a great job,
yeah,
and feels so real and grounded and is somebody who, I don't know, I want a movie, you know,
yeah.
I want a Mama Liz movie, I want to, you know, mm-hmm, like, I want to know these people more, which is really a tribute to our actors who, you know, given not a ton of material, but really loving the material, managed to come in and make more out of it than what was there.
I love that you guys did the spoken word kind of stuff in there. I mean, that's kind of a little groundbreaking. Do you think people will... I mean, I know the urban audience will, but, you know, as far as, like, mainstream.
will they like...
I don't know.
Like, here's, you think it's, you know, if you know spoken word, it'll be an easy transition.
Yeah, yeah. For the
it's
people
different
who,
for a film.
For the people who don't know spoken word, they'll just call it rap. And the people who,
yeah,
sort of understand the nuance of verse will be like, no, that's a very particular kind of poetic,
mm-hmm,
language. And it's not rap. You know, it's,
yeah,
just, it's a little form fluid intentionally, right? Like, we're using every convention of verse language,
mm-hmm,
to get us in and out of these moments. And certain ones, like, really sort of lock into a particular convention, and other ones are sort of abstract. I think what we're really excited about is... There are all these iterations of verse work that exist in theater and in spoken word and in music and in sort of, you know, in traditional, I mean, verse-driven theater has existed,
yeah,
for so long. And then we've seen it sort of exist in films in different way, in different sort of abstractions. But I think we had never seen it done this way before.
Yeah.
I think that some of our polls were like, you know, in the late 90s, Slam did a great thing where poetry is used, but he is a poet, and it is happening in the real world, and it is happening in performance spaces mostly, right? So it's really a story about somebody who is a writer. We really liked these guys who are not rappers, who are just sort of lovers of language, like most people are in the Bay Area. It's a very, like, it's a very stylistic place. It's a very, like, slang-driven place, and so to have people that just freestyle and play around with language is pretty normal. There's a lot of people I know who rap who are not rappers. And so we just love the idea that Colin and Miles are these people, one a little bit more than the other, and seeing where that would snowball, right? But they sort of express verse in different ways. Like, you could argue that the beauty salon scene is just as in verse as the you know, our final scene with Colin. That there is a cadence, you know, it is on a pulse. Even the slang sailboat sailing exchange is like sort of it's dialed on a meter, and the reason of what all that is hoping to do is it's conditioning you to be ready for some of these
mm-hmm,
climactic moments toward the end where everything converges, right? Like, it really starts with Colin just sort of freestyling with his friend in a very conventional way, and then there's all this introduction of Make It Pretty or like the salesmanship of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. So he's like sourcing his own skills, the information that Colin is gathering throughout the entire movie, this like sense of being silenced that's building the pressure, right? And then his best friend, who like while he's like pulling him down behaviorally, is like second-handedly giving him all the tools that he mm-hmm. needs to express himself. Here's how to sell it. You need to sell it. You need to make it sound pretty. Here's the game. You gotta give it to people in a way that they can hear it. And so that's why we had all this. That's why we included this thread of Miles as a salesman. Is he's sort of unknowingly trying to like teaching his best friend to how to get an idea out and bring people onto something. Like, who wants to buy used flat irons? It's a hard sell of a product, but so is the opinion of Colin to Officer Molina. It's a hard sell of a product, you know, to a certain degree. And so we're trying to sort of build that that parallel using verse, so we can get to this moment where Colin finally can.
Yeah, like that part after the sailboat. He's like, "What do you say?" I have no idea. That was hilarious.
Because
I was thinking, "Did I not understand?"
Like, he does, but he got kind of like lost in there, and he's like, "I get the gist."
Yeah. We've almost included subtitles in that scene.
Yeah,
and decided that actually destroyed it. I don't know. Part of the thing is we want you to watch it again and try to follow.
It's all derivative.
It's all real slang.
You can totally solve it if you take your time.
It's kind of an incredible Lance who played that part. Is from the Bay for real, and we found that out in the audition when he was auditioning for another part, and we had him just read this one cold, and he like looks at the script and goes, "I got it," and just like was so excited,
and then he did so much improvising.
Yeah.
We wrote it out with this dense slang, and then he was adding slang,
just adding stuff
to it, and
this.
Then I'd be like, "Oh, okay," add stuff. It was super fun.
That's how you know it was town business
very
for
big,
real.
Very
Aww. Thank you.
Thank you guys
Thanks
so much.
I love that you guys didn't do black and white. Maybe the cop, he's like, he's dealing with his issues, but what he did, it's not just like he's this cold-blooded killer. So I really like that you guys didn't. It wasn't a black and white thing. Everyone was guilty of something at one point, or you know, or trying to make amends, something like that.
Yeah,
that's a good, you know.
Good. I'm glad that comes across.
Yeah. That's also a tribute to Ethan.
Ethan Everyman.
You know, everybody talks about his role in this film, and he has literally 6 words in the whole movie.
Yeah.
He's an incredible actor, and he took it upon himself to make sure that this person was really fully lived in. So,
great job, guys.
Great job.
Thank you
guys
so much.
We
really appreciate you being here for this.
Can we get a shot? Both of you.
Oh, sure. Lena.